Welcome to Upstream, a source of ideas and encouragement for courageous bishops, pastors, priests, and seminarians, and the people who support and work with them, who are swimming against the currents of an increasingly hostile culture to bring Jesus to the world. My name is Pat Lencioni. I'm the host of Upstream. I've got a co-host here today, Chris Jensen. Chris is a management consultant that does a lot of work. He works with a diocese a lot, lots of parishes, lots of companies, and he loves the Catholic Church, and he's almost Catholic. He's on his way. But you love the church, don't you, Chris?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
And you have a lot of thoughts on this. You've really rolled up your sleeves and have worked with a lot of different kind of Catholic organizations and a lot of priests. And so what are we going to talk about today, Chris?
Well, I'm excited about this one, the war on mediocrity, Pat. That's our topic for today.
You know, I think I'm as excited about this topic as almost any we've done, because I know how much great bishops and priests, pastors, and are that word is bothersome. And you know, some people say that the opposite of love is not hate, but indifference. And along that same line of thinking, I would say that the opposite of excellence is not necessarily terribleness or awfulness, but rather mediocrity. I think if you go back to like the book of Revelation, when God says that, you know, he says lukewarm is the worst, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Spew you out of my mouth. And I think mediocrity goes maybe more with lukewarmness. And it's so convicting when somebody says, are you lukewarm? And I go, oh, maybe I am. And it's like, is there mediocrity in your organization? It just stings. There's something about that. And this applies to all kind of organizations. To
right.
say that an organization is mediocre almost feels harsh. And it implies that the people within that organization just don't really care about what they're doing, about their customers or the people they're supposed to be serving. And I know in my work with leaders, there's nothing quite like saying things are mediocre here that repels them and makes them think, oh, we got to do something about that. Now, for priests, from bishops to seminarians who are studying to be priests, you know, this is so important because your vocation is more important than other leaders. I mean, you have the most important jobs in the world. I know it's not just a job.
Right.
And so I think that we need to really unpack this, Chris, this whole concept of mediocrity, so that we can go about eradicating it from the parishes or the dioceses or the apostolates that we lead.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the right topic in the church. And you and I work in both the church and the corporate environment, and we do see mediocrity across all spectrums. And leaders regularly will ask us, what are the most difficult organizations to work with? And they're not surprised when often we'll say, you know, sometimes the church is really challenging. And this is one of the topics. And as somebody who's recently immersing himself in the Catholic Church, coming from the evangelical side, I'm so inspired by the church. Sometimes I find myself surprised internally to not see the same enthusiasm, vigor, excitement, drive. I'll work with an organization that's making widgets. Well, not Working Genius widgets, but widgets. And you see the enthusiasm and drive for that. And then you go to the church and you think, this is eternal. This is spiritual. This is transforming lives. And yet you don't see that same vigor all the time.
Right. And we need to make sure that we know that we're not talking here about spiritual mediocrity, which is a whole different thing. And that is the lack of faith or the belief in the teachings of Jesus and the church. That's spiritual mediocrity is tragic.
Right.
And we know that there's places where that's true in the church. We've talked about that before. What we're talking about here and the people listening to this podcast, that's not the challenge here. Generally speaking, they believe, yeah. and they want to do the best they can do. And so the question becomes, why would mediocrity exist in an organization that's so important, as you said,
yeah,
that matters so much? And I think that, and I love the fact that you're relatively new to the Catholic Church, Chris, because the newcomers see things clearer sometimes.
Mm.
The rest of us who have been in it for a long time can feel like, well, we're kind of used to this. But I have found in my work with evangelical churches, not so much with mainline Protestant churches that have been around for a long time. But the difference between like the Catholic Church and many of the, I call them startup evangelical churches, is mm-hmm. that there's more mediocrity tolerated in Catholic churches and in dioceses and things like that. I think for a few reasons, one of which is we've been around for a long time. And by the grace of God, we know that he is going to be with the church forever. But there's not this sense that we're going to go out of business. Whereas that right. evangelical church that's down the road, they actually feel like they might. So if they don't do excellent, people will just go someplace else and right. they will cease to exist. Now, what plenty of bishops will tell you, yeah, but we're closing parishes or we're combining them now. And technically, we can lose our way. But yeah. we've been around for so long that people kind of think, yeah, but we're going to be here 10 years from now, even if we don't fix these problems. And so I right. think it creates kind of a sad and unintentional complacency that I yeah. think is somewhat unique to the Catholic Church and probably to many mainline Protestant churches as well. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And it's true. I've seen evangelical churches close all the yeah. time. The church I grew up in closed. Actually, I just got an email that they're tearing it down and building houses where that church was, which is sad. And, you know, it's a whole different conversation, but they do close. And the Catholic Church, even in the diocese I work with, they're going through the pastoral planning and what do we do with parishes? But it is different to your point. There is a sense that on the positive side, one of the things I admire about it is this is Jesus's church. It's not ours to save and protect. On the other, the curse side of that is the urgency to be a source of evangelization in our area and to bring the transformation of Christ to our parishes, to our cities. You can see that coming down. And I guess you would know better than I would, because to me it's surprising. I'm so inspired by it. I don't know why anybody wouldn't be talking about this, but if you've lived in it and you've gone through it as tradition, I could, you know, that's probably a driver of mediocrity. It's unfortunate.
Yeah. And here's the thing. It's not really a Catholic thing because, I mean, Jesus started the Catholic Church. Peter, the first Pope, Paul, in Antioch, they were at risk of losing everything, you know, in Antioch. So it's not like the church, in the earliest church, they didn't have this challenge.
Right.
You know, they did have the challenge. We need to compel people here. And of course, it's the Holy Spirit doing the work. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But there was a sense like we have to reach people now. There's a sense of urgency and high standards that sometimes doesn't exist in some Catholic places where in a diocese or a parish, they feel like, well, it was kind of like this 20 years ago. It'll probably be like this 20 years from now. And of course, we don't want that.
Right. And it's one of the things I love about my relationship with the priests and bishops that I work with. Being an outsider, seeing it alive, I can see them, their eyes light up. When I talk about Mass or elements of the Mass, there's a reminder to them of how special this is. And you can see their own urgency and excitement, enthusiasm start to go back up because the bureaucracy they've lived in has, you know, it's being reminded of the lifeblood of it.
And that's one of the things about converts coming into the church. I mean, I probably, if I look at all the Catholics I know that have taught me the most, many of them were converts because they're like, hey, do you realize this? And I'm like, I think I was taught that when I was young, but maybe I don't remember it, or maybe I see in your eyes this new excitement. And so converts keep us fresh. And outsiders sometimes do too. And that's why you and I as lay people, when we go in and work with them, we're like, hey, this can be better. And they're like, really?
Right.
Okay, there's another thing. And the other thing that I think sometimes keeps Catholic churches from being more excellent is this. We've gotten lured into this sense that working at a Catholic church is a bit of a jobs program. And you know, social justice is, and the real true meaning of it is wonderful. But what the people we're meant to be serving are in the congregation, and people that aren't yet in the congregation are on the street or out there. And sometimes we lose sight of that and think, well, it's these people that work in the church office that we're supposed to be protecting their livelihood and their job. And when that happens, mediocrity is almost inevitable because we're very limited in what we can ask of them or how hard we can push them.
Right. right? And we see that both in the church and outside. Once it becomes a job, your enthusiasm and sense of mission and purpose immediately starts to come down. And like you said earlier, in the church side, I meet so many people who love the church. They're faithful. They're not faithful. But years and years of clock in, clock out, it's a job. And there hasn't been any disruption to that or any reminders. It's one of the reasons why I think the priest in particular, the bishop in particular, you and I were talking about this on the phone, the role of the bishop I've recently just been inspired by to be the chief reminders of how important this is and why if you work here, even as a layperson, this is not just a job. I was telling our archbishop, you know, the chancery office, the pastoral center, this should be the best place to work of any company because everything you're doing is for an eternal purpose in the church.
And it should be the best place to work for people who are on fire and who fit the culture and agree with the mission.
Yeah.
And, you know, a Protestant pastor I knew who once said to me, nobody should work in a church who need the job.
Mm.
That doesn't mean we shouldn't pay people. But if you're like, oh, I can't possibly leave this job, then it's going to be really difficult. And people should work there because they're like, no, I get to work here.
Yeah.
I get to work here.
Right.
And I always say too, we should actually not see our volunteers and our paid staff as different. We should expect as much from our volunteers as our paid staff. Just because they're not paid doesn't mean they don't want to be. And in fact, the best volunteers want to know that the standards are high and that much is expected of them.
Yeah.
And then we should look at our paid staff and inspire them as though they're not paid at all.
Right.
Which sometimes what we do is we don't expect a lot of our volunteers. Well, we don't pay them. And then we don't feel like, well, I don't have to inspire the people that are paid because it's their job.
It's their job.
And we usually get the worst on both ends. So we have to look at both of them and say, inspire them all, expect a lot from them all, whether they're paid or not is almost incidental.
Yeah, yeah. And I haven't met anybody at any of the parishes or dioceses who are paid so much that they feel enthused by that.
Right.
It's not a career, but I do see a lot of people who they love the church and they started working there and they've been there for decades and it has become a job and they're loyal to it as a job.
Right.
And yet there's not that punch in their sense of their experience at work at all.
You know what sometimes happens in those situations too when we allow that to happen? Is that good people come along, either people that retire early or want to make a change in their job and that they could work in the parish, but they're on fire.
Right.
And I don't think people do this on purpose, but they get blocked out because they're like, this is going to be a threat to the stability of my job. And great volunteers and great potential employees are often turned off and pushed away by people who are protecting mediocrity.
Right. You've known priests and bishops, you've been in the church your whole life. And so I actually don't fully understand as an outsider, if I'm a priest and I've given myself to this, what holds them back from being, you know, we would use in some of our vernacular, like a galvanizer, somebody who lights the fire and gets things excited. Where does that come from? Why not? They've given their whole life for this.
Well, that's what I want to talk about today. The number one thing that I want to really hone in on today is that the biggest, I'm convinced of this, and you know, I've been a Catholic my whole life, but I've only been working in the church for the last 10 or 11, 12 years. So I'm really newer to like the inside workings of churches and dioceses and things like that. The number one reason why mediocrity exists among faithful bishops, priests, pastors, is that they don't want to have difficult conversations. I'm convinced of this. They see the mediocrity. They're on the altar and they hear the singing or they hear the reading or they're in their office and they see that less people are going to confirmation or they're talking to parents who say, my kid hates confirmation. It's boring or whatever the program is, whatever the, you know, or a bishop says, oh my gosh, I'm getting so many complaints about all these parishes where whatever else it is. And it's at that moment where they think, I'm going to have a really uncomfortable conversation with that school principal, pastor,
right,
volunteer, layperson, and they think, there must be a reason why I shouldn't have, I can come up with some other explanation that could prevent me from doing that.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I'm actually, as you're describing that, I'm reflecting over the last couple of years with our archdiocese. They have been going through a transformation from the inside out. Actually, you're right. If I look at what has really been the source of transformation, it's been the leaders beginning to confront things that were the sole source of mediocrity, either people who weren't actually faithful, confronting them, which was inspiring to the faithful ones because it sent a message, we're serious about this mission.
And it gave the person who wasn't faithful a chance to become faithful, which is imperative.
Totally. And that's been the spirit of all of these conversations is let's bring people into the mission and the work of evangelization. And so those, but I do see the struggle to have those conversations and the challenge of, I don't want to push people away. You know, when I think of the leaders, the pastors I work with and the bishops, they genuinely don't want to push people away, which I admire. And yet robbing the people of the challenge is what keeps us in this mid state of mediocrity.
Yeah. Let's use a few examples so we can put some leaves on this tree.
Yeah.
Like imagine that you're in a parish and you're the pastor and you know that one of the priests, your associate priest, is usually probably one other.
Mm.
That you've heard from people that his homilies aren't good. You've been in a couple of situations where you've seen him speak. A good man, faithful, which is the most important thing. And delivering a good homily is not what makes a great priest. Although it's really important to help people access the gospel and Jesus. Mm-hmm. And for people that are coming to mass and looking to connect to the beauty of the truth, it's important. It's really important. And pastors will know that priest doesn't give a good homily and not want to tell him.
Right.
And parishioners will come up and go, oh, when Father Fred, I use Fred as an example. My old pastor was Father Fred. I'm not talking about him. Father, when Father Fred preaches, my kids are just, we go home and they complain and it's so sad. And it's that moment where in love and grace and truth, that pastor can sit down, I want to help you with your homilies.
Right.
And yet they'll think, yeah, I don't know. He's, you know, there's so many excuses for not having that conversation. And yet Father Fred will benefit from it. The parishioners are going to benefit from it. Here's another one. A bishop knows that one of the Catholic high schools in his diocese is not teaching the truth of the faith.
Yeah.
And people will tell him that, say, my children are there. My children go there and get confused. And even the parish priests, the pastors know that the kids that they educated up till eighth grade or took through, you know, catechism are now being misled I will talk to these people and they will say, well, I don't really have authority over that. They're run by a religious order or, you know, and it's like, no, just go have a loving, but direct conversation with the principal and say, I'm as a brother in Christ and as your spiritual leader, a priest or a bishop, I'm calling on you to correct this error.
Right.
Because it's not good for you and it's not good for them.
Right.
That to me is not an optional thing.
Right.
And I'm just here to say, and I love, and these are not unfaithful bishops and priests, but even the faithful ones will find a reason why it's probably not going to work.
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't have to work. The Holy Spirit will make it work, but you have to play your part. And I think mediocrity persists in so many things in the church. Precisely because we think that having a hard conversation is not part of our job.
That's exactly right. This has been one of the, if I think of the pastor at the parish where I go to mass, largely because of the work with Amazing Parish and engaging that and learning some of these principles where he's formed a team. And I remember hearing about his team and in the early phase, it's gone through iterations because as he formed it, he started to have to confront behaviors and attitudes amongst that group. These are people who love the parish, love the church, but he started recognizing in himself the challenge of doing this. And there was a lot of fear. I don't want them to leave. I don't want them to leave the parish. I don't want them to get pushed away. But as he started doing it, and he started to realize they're coming together, they're getting, as a result of confronting and having those difficult conversations, they're more clear on what we're trying to accomplish and what's expected of me, their enthusiasm. And now a few years later, they have an amazing principal at their school. Their school is going through a radical transformation where they're having difficult conversations, and a lot of their faculty and staff are coming on board. A few have left, not many, but most of them are coming on board, and that's creating a whole new buzz. Their parish families, I mean, there's all these young families and kids, and it's because of the willingness to have the difficult conversations, which is just not easy. None of the pastors I've met have ever learned these things. These are not the things they've learned about.
Yes, and what's amazing about this is this isn't taught in seminary, and I understand that, but it's not because the church doesn't believe this. I mean, throughout the Bible,
right,
people are being called in truth and love to do better.
Right.
Jesus did it with the apostles, the disciples, all the time. They did it with one another. There's examples throughout church history, but somehow today, and I think it's society in general, it says you're always supposed to affirm people, and they're a volunteer and they're not doing very good, but let's just go thank them.
Yeah.
And then the people, but everybody kind of knows they're not good at this. Yeah, but we should just thank them anyway. It's like,
yeah,
no, call them to do better.
Right, right. And when you think of the mission of the church, which is a spiritual mission, so it's not like a company where we're trying to sell products, but there's a spiritual mission and there is a spiritual enemy. The goal to just make us mediocre and ineffective and just stay put causes us to completely miss our mission. So like you said at the beginning, the lukewarm nature, you know, in our diocese, we have, you know, some parishes that you know they're not faithful, and you think, okay, that's at least clear. We know.
Yes.
But then there are parishes where pastors are alone, they're maybe rural, and this is one of the benefits of watching our archdiocese bring all the priests together and really start to galvanize them as a priesthood, because most of these guys were just in parishes, disconnected from the other priests, alone, feeling like, I don't know where this is going or what I'm a part of. And so bringing them together, having these difficult conversations, pushing and challenging each other is creating a fire. It's incredible.
I love it. And you know, what I love too is, I'm going to tell you, I know of a priest who's the most amazing guy. He's changed my life, my family's life in many ways. And he actually knows that he struggles with this. And I so admire he will ask me, pray for me to grow in courage that I can have these difficult conversations, as opposed to justifying not doing it as though it's a virtue.
Yeah, right.
He's like, oh, it's so hard, because I'm here to say, I get it.
Right.
I know it's hard. And when you're a pastor or a bishop, the idea that you might challenge someone on something and they might say, you're being mean, it's like, oh my gosh, but I'm a priest and
yeah,
I love Jesus and I love you, and you think I'm being mean. That's almost like enough to make you not want to do anything. But to realize that you can do it for the glory of God and
right,
even for that person, even if you're rejected. But I will say this, Chris, to do it alone,
yeah,
is really hard. That's why, like at the Amazing Parish, we say, surround yourself by two or three or four people that you trust, that you can go into your office and say, hey, I'm going to have a difficult conversation with Fred.
Right.
And I know his programs haven't worked for years.
Right.
And I'm going to have to do something about it. And he might be mad at me. And a few of the people that are his supporters might be mad at me.
Right.
But here's why I'm going to do it. And to know that there's people that will surround you, have your back, hold up your arms, pray for you. And even if you're getting attacked, they'll be there with you.
Right.
That can make all the difference. But if you think as a pastor or a bishop that you're not allowed to have friends, peers, support you when you feel alone.
Right.
Then, I mean, I think Satan loves that. And you know, something else that I just thought about is, you were talking about, you know, in the Screwtape Letters, C.S. Lewis talks about the devil is teaching his apprentice demon, you know. Mm. He says, what should I do? Should I get him involved in all these terrible things? And he says, no, just keep him busy. Just distract them.
Okay, this is the point. I was actually talking about, this is a light bulb that I've had about the critical role of the bishop. Because now I've met a few and I hear a similar story. They're busy doing administrative work and they don't want to. I mean, the bishops I've met love Christ. They love the church. They love the work of evangelism, but they're locked in their desks, signing papers and going to this committee meeting and doing all these different things. And the role of the bishop to bring these priests together so they're not lonely. I mean, the Amazing Parish is an amazing gift to galvanize those pastors who are alone. But when a bishop can get out of his administrative overload and start pulling together the priesthood and making it a true, you know, brotherhood amongst them, bringing them together, challenging, encouraging, that is an amazing gift to the church.
And you know, Chris, I think it comes back because if you were to say to a bishop, and I always wanted to do this, is to sit down and go through their calendar with them and say, probably it should go like this. No, no, yes, no, no, yes, no, no, no. But each time they think, yeah, but every no is going to make some committee feel bad.
Right.
And if you think that you can, and I love when Jesus, they said, but Jesus, there's more people here. He goes, no, no, my mission is to move on to the next town. And yet, and I'm susceptible to this too. You cannot please everyone. And if you do, mediocrity becomes the result.
Totally.
Because I'm going to go to every little organization that asks me to show up, I'm going to do that.
Right.
And pretty soon the three biggest things that you're called to do that is really going to transform the diocese or your parish or your apostolate, you are going to be robbing from Peter to pay Paul. I'm not really sure what that means.
How that works.
But yeah. And I never thought about it. Was that Peter and Paul? But the point here is you're going to be depriving yourself of doing the best. And most bishops, I mean, when they answered the call to the priesthood, they wanted to bring people to Jesus.
Right.
They didn't want to bring people to a potluck.
Exactly.
And there's just too much potlucking and not enough.
I actually wish it were even potlucking. At least then they would be talking over food.
Yes.
Most of the times they're in their office signing paperwork and talking to committees. I told our bishop, I said, you know, my vision for you is one day you're going to come into work and you're going to first pray and then just think, who should I be spending my time with today and not be locked into your calendar? Because he said exactly what you said. He's just calendar appointment. He's like, I feel broken. I was like, turn it off. You're the bishop. You're the chief evangelist of our archdiocese. Like, we need you. We need you in prayer. We need you studying, writing. Yeah. Amazing.
That's amazing. And I love it. It probably took a convert in the process and a lover of the church and an outsider to be willing to say that to the bishop. And I'm sure he absolutely appreciated and responded well. It's hard.
It's hard.
He wants permission.
Yeah. Which gets back to your point of the difficult conversations. Probably for me, I'm asking and saying difficult things that I don't even know because I don't know all the sacred cows in kind of some of the insiders of the Catholic Church. So I just come in and start asking questions. Why are you doing that? And that doesn't seem right that you're doing that. And he's like, yes, thank you. And then let's figure it out. And then, but you're right about the difficult conversations because the next step is almost always I have to then go talk to somebody about how I can stop doing this. And that is a difficult conversation. And every time he's willing to do it, and this is true about any of the priests, every time they do it, it produces freedom. And to be honest, everybody feels better.
Yeah.
Even and the ones who are the receivers of it.
Yeah. I think what's important is to be so vulnerable, is to say, I have to tell you no. I want you to know it's so hard for me to do that. Because I don't want you to think I don't care about you. And I don't want you to think I'm not interested in you and this. I have a few priorities that I have to do that are the right, that both for the church. So I'm going to say no to you. And just know it takes a lot of willpower for me to do that. Because it's so much easier to say yes, but it's not the right thing for the church. In other words, be honest with people like, I hate saying no. Most of them will go, they'll start going, hey, Bishop, I'm going to ask you this, but you got to promise me you'll say no if you don't think you should.
Yeah.
But what happens is we get to the point where we think our pastor and our bishop are going to say yes to everything. So we just keep throwing things on their calendar. I love that you said that to the bishop.
Actually, just reminds me, I was looking at your crucifix behind you, and I have one in my office. One of the things I always loved, and the reason I put one up in my office, was I love seeing the crucifix. And people come and they say, well, why do you have that? And I think this might be something good for pastors and priests to remind themselves when they look is, I said, sometimes I have to do hard things. And then I will regularly just look and think, you know, if he could do that, I can totally go there with this person. If he could, if he could do that out of love, like I can do these feel like big things to me, but none of it compares to what he went through because he loved us. So if we love the church, we love the mission of the church, we love these people, then can't we be a little bit more like Christ? And I think with pastors and priests, they have this visible reminder everywhere they go that we could just in those moments, okay, Jesus, if you could do that, I can certainly go say this to them because I love them.
Right. I can say to somebody, I need you to make the homilies better.
Right.
I need to get somebody else to run confirmation.
Exactly.
Because I've seen this and the thing, while Jesus is up there on the cross we might have is that someone will be upset with us.
Exactly.
And it's like, and that's suffering. I can suffer through that. So, Chris, I want to thank you for loving on the church and for bringing this beautiful perspective. And as a lifelong Catholic, you inspire me to love the church even more. I want to thank everybody listening to this, whether you're a seminarian or a bishop or a pastor or associate priest, thank you for your answering the call, for your vocation and love for Jesus and the church. And thank you to all those people that are working with priests and bishops that are listening for making that your vocation, your job, or your volunteering experience. So that's it today. Let's declare war on mediocrity because it's good, it's virtuous, it's loving. And thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you next time on Upstream. God bless.